Would you like your heavy networking skills to be even heavier? IT Pro TV is sponsoring today's episode, and they're offering a 7-day free trial and a 30% discount off of any of their online IT training plans. Visit itpro.tv/packetpushers and use promo code packetpushers at checkout.
Welcome to Packet Pushers. And today's show, we wanted to dig into the internet. Now, one of the things that people have often said in this era of pandemic planning and the reactions to COVID-19 is that the internet is falling, failing, or collapsing, which generally has proven out over the last 3 weeks to be a complete pile of bunk. And what I wanted to do is put together a show. We sort of talked about, from the people that know, what's actually happening on the internet as a whole. Big topic, and we're only going to obviously cover a part of it here. But joining me today is Neil McRae. He's a senior leader in BT, one of the world's largest telecommunications providers, and he's also on the board of the London Internet Exchange. And Dave Temkin, who's a VP of Infrastructure at Netflix and the founder of the Community IX, and we'll hear more about what they do in those businesses later on. But gentlemen, we've had this situation where we've had the widespread lockdowns as a result of the pandemic from COVID-19. We've seen massive changes in the patterns of the internet. But the internet doesn't seem to have actually collapsed particularly, and we've seen a substantial change. Now, Neil, you've been looking at this and tweeting about this and saying the internet, certainly from the point of view of BT where you work, is working just fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. There was a kind of an initial flurry of people or experts posting that the internet won't be able to cope. And I kind of felt that, you know, I kind of knew going into this that As we started to see what was happening in China and Italy, and I have a team based in Italy as well, We kind of knew that the internet working was going to be important. And secondly, that people having confidence in the internet was also going to be important. So I felt that putting out some real facts, as much as you can do in a large corporation, because you've always got sign-off, people worried about what you're saying, I felt it was important to try and put out a view that showed what was really happening. And you know, I think a lot of people appreciate that. Certainly I've had more new Twitter followers in the last 3 weeks than I've had in the last 10 years. So that's one upside of it. Yeah. I genuinely agree with your summary. I think, you know, the internet's performing well. And I think, you know, it's probably one of those areas where we probably don't share enough about how well our networks work, and it's something, actually, another forum that I'm part of, UK NOF, Network Operators Forum, a bit like NANOG in the United States, where we try and share that best practice.
Yeah, because you were putting out tweets saying that the BT network is seeing a higher average level of utilization, but nowhere near peak. And yeah, I think people are confusing the idea of average and peak, and really, It's only peak that matters, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, our network, you know, we've hit 17 terabits a second. That was our peak, driven by football, which in this country we love. Mm. And that was about just before Christmas that happened. During this crisis, that we haven't got to that peak. What's happened is rather than the traffic grow up the access, the traffic's grown, you know, wider.
Yeah.
So usually the network's relatively quiet during the day, and at kind of 4 o'clock when the kids come home, put their Xboxes on or put their Netflix on, you know, the network gets busier. What we're seeing is that rather than that being at 4 o'clock, it's kind of at 8 a.m., 9 a.m. And it goes on till kind of 10:30. Actually, another interesting fact, we've seen the kind of nighttime traffic drop a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Because I think overall people are getting up earlier, and we see this in some of the, we see this, I mean, genuinely, I'm actually up later because I don't have to commute. But we definitely see, you know, backed up by some of the mobile network data, it feels like more people are up and about a little bit earlier than perhaps they have been. So people, you know, thinking, and also, you know, perhaps a little bit of television fatigue, you know, because people watch the news at 10 p.m.,
There's only so much streaming movies you can watch before you start to get into a coma. Is that?
I wouldn't say that. I could watch for forever. And actually, I've just been watching Formula One: Drive to Survive on Netflix, which is a phenomenal program. If you haven't watched it, I encourage you. Although it's over 18s for sure with the language, but you know, I'm a big TV nut, so I can watch TV day and night. My wife's a bit more. She times out on a little bit, but I think there's definitely a sense, certainly last weekend,
Well, I guess the other thing is, what about people working from home? Because if people are working from home, there's a definite traffic shift where people were used to commute into some central location. Like, Dave, you've got this, right? You're no longer in the head office. You're on the other side of town. And the traffic that would have happened in Manhattan is now happening somewhere outside of Manhattan. And that's changing the way the network looks at some level, I would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, from what we're seeing, you know, at Netflix, to Neil's point, people are watching throughout the day, right? It is a very different traffic pattern, both, you know, virtually what I see in Netflix and physically what I see out my front window here in the New York suburbs. You know, it is definitely the same thing for me here. I'm going to bed early and getting up early. And from what I see from my neighbors, it's very similar. And from what I see from traffic, especially Community IX, which is our internet exchange point in Southern Florida in Miami, we're definitely seeing that pattern, which is that the utilization is much wider throughout the day and is less peaky, in that it kind of goes up and stays up. And you know, from what we can see traffic wise, it's like during the day are enterprise apps, and in the evening are things like streaming.
Right. The shift of people working from home has raised the average, but it hasn't shifted the peak at all. We haven't seen any spikes in download, because I've always had a pet theory that enterprise doesn't actually generate that much traffic. They're kind of like a trivial traffic loading in terms of what they put onto networks
generally. I think that's correct. I think that enterprise is actually not this big behemoth that people thought it was going to be in this situation. Mm-hmm. And you know, the traffic numbers, again, that we're seeing at Community IX definitely back that up, which is that we are seeing some amount of enterprise traffic fill in the trough from the streaming services and from other, you know, recreational services during the day. But it's not one-to-one. It's not like at 6 p.m. the enterprise app shut off and you know, people start streaming. Yeah. You know, there are people using these services through the entire day, whether it's kids at home or you know, anyone not employed, unfortunately, whatever that might be, they're using those services throughout the day in addition to enterprise apps. Now, granted, the enterprise apps are super critical. We're talking right now on a Zoom conference, right? Zoom wasn't functioning because the internet wasn't functioning, we wouldn't have this high quality conference, right? But the internet is functioning just fine.
I mean, just to build on the enterprise, so you know, BT, we run a global network for enterprises. That network traffic has come down quite considerably, but we see our kind of home worker VPN service. We've seen a huge amount of demand for that, both actually inside BT. You know, we've got over 50,000 people using our VPN service, just as we use our own services as a customer. 50,000 people at home using that, and the traffic's, you know, it's not a significant amount of traffic. The big things driving traffic are actually, we've got a guy workplace from Facebook and our intranet. There's a guy at 4 o'clock that does a DJ set that he calls virtual drive time, and then lots of people tune into it, and that drives a bit of enterprise traffic. So, and we're seeing, and for me, that's a really, you know, great use of the internet. We're seeing a lot more people using video and you know, to try and have some semblance of closeness to see what's going on. I think Zoom are probably one of the big winners out of that. Along with Teams as well, that you know, people do want, you know, as many times I've had a webcam forever that I never used until the last 2 weeks, right? So I think we're definitely seeing, you know, a shift. But that you're spot on. That actual enterprise traffic is tiny in comparison to the usual day to day, you know, consumer style broadband traffic.
Yeah, that's what I thought, because when you consume something like a Netflix movie or Quibi, which has appeared this week, and all that sort of stuff, they're actually far more intensive in terms of packet flows than anything an enterprise is going to use. And quite often the enterprise stuff is quite light, because it has been using, you know, overpriced MPLS connections instead of, you know,
I think where bandwidth was actually good value for money MPLS connections, I think.
Now, Dave, you've also got a big CDN network inside of the Netflix infrastructure. That must be a real worry for you to watch and make sure that's staying up, or is that operating fine? Like, is it a sustained load again, not a peak load?
Look, at the end of the day, the network is operating great. Like, what we've seen at this point is definitely large amounts of growth across the world. You know, people are watching more Netflix. They're, you know, really engaging with the service. But we tend to build our capacity ahead. And so a lot of what we ended up doing was pulling in capacity augments that were planned for later this year in earlier. And, you know, thanks to my awesome acquisition team, we already had data center space reserved for most of the servers that we're needing to rapidly deploy to get to keep up. Yeah. But in reality, we are keeping up. And it's great. We're able to have this infrastructure around the world. And our ISP partners, you know, we have a great partner engagement team that is just in constant contact with our ISP partners. Yeah. And they are talking to them about, hey, what can we do to make your lives easier? And it's like, it's not a sales pitch. We're literally trying to make sure that in this like super stressful time that we're not adding to that stress. And you know, we've provided, for example, these kinds of forecasts about what our traffic will look like through the end of the year to most of these ISP partners. So many of them have already also started building this infrastructure. So in general, things are actually going quite well for us right now.
But so when you say in general, I'm hearing, but in specific, not so great.
I'll help you explore that a little bit. So yes, in specifics, we are starting to see things like slowdowns of data center providers in how they can support us from a remote hands perspective. They're trying their best. I mean, at the end of the day, we know that you know they're doing everything they can, but some of them have staff that are out sick. Some of them are subject to stay-at-home orders, right? They're doing the best they can. The other thing is that, you know, from a supply chain perspective, there's uncertainty. We know where we can get the next tranche of hardware that we need, but we don't know where it's going to come from after that. And right now, much of the international cargo shipping is dedicated to humanitarian needs, right? As you know, much of normal cargo shipping goes over passenger aircraft. Most passenger aircraft isn't flying right now. So we're somewhat limited there. But in you know, we're not seeing anything that's literally like you would consider to be on fire. We're seeing things that are a little warm, and we're doing what we can to stay on top of that. And, you know, we are very responsive. The EU asked us to reduce bit rates in Europe, and we did that. We rolled that out as quickly as we could for them.
That felt speculative. That didn't feel like there was actually a need. It was sort of a nip the problem in the bud sort of thing before it happened. And I said on the Network Break, which is the weekly show where I wrap up the news, I said, my speculation here is that Europe is a big country, if you want to think of it as one thing. In countries like the UK and Germany and France have got good networks with lots of capacity, but there's also places like Poland and Bulgaria and Greece where the capacity is much more limited. And so you do want to try and do the best you can for everybody. And so it felt speculative, like getting ahead of the problem to me.
I think that the EU looked specifically at Italy and Spain and talked with the carriers there and said, hey, what are your big challenges? And to the point before, from a workforce perspective, they're very limited in getting augments out there. And so it's not that they didn't want to get on top of this. Mm-hmm. It's that they had no choice. And they obviously, like most of us, didn't see this coming at the scale at which it came. And so I think the EU looked at that and said, hey, you know, other carriers in other countries, what do you think? Do you think that this is going to be a problem? And I think that they found that other carriers wanted to play it as cautiously as they could. Yeah. And so we certainly could have sat around and like picked apart each country's capacity and said, okay, here's you know, specifically for Bulgaria, what should we do? Or we could just say, okay, EU, you know, you're in constant contact with your member states. Let's try to do what's right by you. And we'll reevaluate this in, you know, 30 days or whatever makes sense for everyone.
Yeah, that just felt like, you know, you might as well get ahead of this. Nobody's going to miss 4K for a while, except for
We're still serving 4K. We're just serving a lower bitrate 4K. And yeah. I don't know about you, but like at age 40-something, I can't tell the difference, but I know there are people who absolutely can.
Yeah, I mean, just to add to that, I think you're right. There was some speculative stuff in it. We have limited data or limited scenarios where we see a lot of people working from home. And we see a lot of kids off school. The last time that happened in the UK in particular was about 2 years ago. We had a snow day, and it was one of our busiest days ever. It wasn't what the peak since we've seen. It's not been our busiest since then. But at that point in time, we were kind of like, wow, look at this. And we had lots of people working from home. So we were actually quite confident that we could cope with a large amount of traffic and a large amount of volume of people working from home and kids being at home. What we were uncertain about is where was the fall off point? And in my experience in internet traffic, when you hit that fall off point, it kind of falls off in a big way. So, you know, I reached out to Dave. I kind of knew that he would be working on this already, and he was. So I pinged Dave, said, Dave, are you guys working on anything? And you know, when he said yes, I was like, okay, well, we definitely want to turn that on because, again, Bill, you know, you've had a few folks say the network's going to fall over. You've got government who's leveraging a lot of economic value on the network and people being able to work from home, particularly here in the UK, where we're a services, you know, we don't manufacture stuff predominantly. We're banking, we're services, we're call centers, we're, you know, we do services-based business. So the view was is actually we could keep a lot of people working if the network's right, and the government was quite onto us quite early to ask for you know what both us and our competitors across the UK what our capability was. So yeah, we took you know I really appreciate the work that Netflix and actually I call it YouTube as well, Google who kind of were proactive about this, and together those are the two big guys from our perspective and you know
I love the fact that all of this sounds like it's a special insiders club. You all know each other and you kind of ring each other up and say
we do.
I mean it's kind of funny, but at the end of the day, you know, the internet, which we're supposed to use a small I internet now, is really a small place, right? It is a limited number of networks. And I think the closeness of this allows us to react quickly and allows us to do the kind of things that we can. Look, you know, we got calls from every regulator in every major country in Europe, in LATAM, all over the place asking us to engage. And at the end of the day, we were able to solve this by working together with the networks versus having to have the regulators step in. And to be clear, the regulators were great. Like off
everybody wins. Everybody wins. Nobody wins when the regulators get involved because it all goes skewy.
We think that the light touch that they brought to this was perfect. And that in the end, we were able to work out a solution that worked for what we think is everyone.
Yeah, I mean, they acted as a facilitator, to be honest, we were probably ahead of them. On that anyway, but having them as a facilitator, and again, this is about confidence, you know, them being involved, and we had DCMS, which is the kind of Ministry for Telecommunications and Media here in the UK. We had them involved as well, again, very supportive in showing it. And personally speaking, I helped set one of the first ISPs here in the UK back in the late 80s, early 90s. For me, this was kind of our moment as network providers. And I personally really wanted this to go well. You know, I can remember the last 20 years, people say, well, the internet's never quite good enough. It's never quite good enough. And I call bullshit on that now. I think the internet is a fantastic platform for people to do many different things, work, play, you know, the choices are endless. And you know, I think we've proven that.
Yeah, I think you have. But I also think we, to a large extent, we earned a bad reputation over the last 15 years. When the internet first came, we didn't want to make it too good. We didn't throw our resources behind it. We kind of restricted it, and it was slow, and there was so much potential, and everybody could sort of taste it, like could feel what the internet could be, but it never sort of quite got. And there were so many different. It wasn't just the network as well, by the way. It was also the quality of the software and the money that needed to be thrown at certain things. But I think everybody realized how good it could be, but we never were able to deliver it until perhaps now, perhaps.
It's no coincidence that Netflix is called Netflix, right? There was always the ambition, even though we shipped DVDs for many years, there's always the ambition that we were going to be able to stream over the internet when it got good enough. And I think we've definitely proven, you know, with help, like, you know, people like Neil, that it is good enough.
I just find it amusing that somewhere out there, there's a star chamber of internet people, you know, sitting around, you know, and they all talking in the background, and all of a sudden because that's kind of what it is sometimes. All the people who operate the networks have this unofficial contact, you know, unofficial group, and it's odd.
I don't know if I quite put it like that. I mean, at the end of the day, the internet is about collaboration.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things I think we kind of, you know, I haven't been involved with it for a while. A lot of us were trying to collaborate to push this forward. But then, you know, you go through the normal hype cycle of this stuff, and the internet went through it for a period of time, you know, all the dot-com doomsday that we went through, you know, which was painful for many of us. But I think the core the core part about when people collaborate on the internet, amazing things happen. And I think we're just, I actually think we're still at the very early stages of that. And and we've got relatively simple collaborations, you know, us working with Dave's
team.
Yeah,
sorry, it's not like it's a secret council that just
sends.
Yeah, we're not like walking around a fire saying for the greater good.
No. It's literally like, why are our networks not working? I know Dave over there. I'll give him a ring, you know?
But that allows us to get stuff done. But at the same time, you know, Neil knows me. I know a bunch of people elsewhere. But I have an awesome team of people behind me that are doing this all day, every day. And frankly, they know a lot of people too. And so, we have these discussions and it sounds funny, but at the end of the day, like, it is a very large community working together collaboratively.
I think that's the other thing about the internet, is that all the people who participate in the internet, because it is a network of networks, also means it's a network of network owners. And those owners need to communicate with each other every day anyway. In the perception is from the outside, it could be a little bit clubby or a little bit insular, but it's not normally that. It's normally just talking in a specialist language. I wanted to talk a little bit about internet exchange points, because exchange points are where the networks connect together. So this is where, you know, each one of the telcos connects to other networks and connects to backbone networks and things like that. It seems to me that if the internet's going to have problems, it's likely to be on the internet exchange points somewhere. And there's two types of exchange points, private and public. Now, in general, I've been following a Google Doc put together by Christian Koch, who's tracking all of the IXPs. He's got a massive Google Doc going with a whole bunch of slides called Global Network Traffic. And you can go and look at it as a link in the show notes. And you can see a list of sort of showing that all the public IXPs aren't working so well. But some of the people that I spoke to said some of the private internet exchange peering is having troubles. Maybe some of the private peering isn't working so well. Have you seen that?
I don't think it's necessarily specifically around working well or not. What it definitely is that the flows of traffic that we're seeing are not what anyone built this infrastructure for. But the thing is, it's holding up, right? Again, we're having this call. It's working great. And so the internet is adaptable and you have people working around the clock. You've got the awesome team, in my case, at FLIX in Florida, who are, you know, turning up capacity left and right for our members as they ask for it. And the members have the ports and the data center providers are delivering the cross connects and everything's working as we kind of intended. And that's from a public exchange point. And then from a private exchange point, same thing, only take the switch out of it, which is that, there's flows going places that I don't think people really thought about, right? If you were designing the network for Zoom, you wouldn't have thought, hey, I might need terabits of capacity to Comcast, right? It just wouldn't have been the number one place, you know, to a broadband ISP versus like BT, who has a big business, a big commercial business as well. You wouldn't have thought to deploy that. And so I am sure they're out there deploying a bunch of capacity.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about Zoom and things like that is that they're not the strain that video conferencing we use today puts on the network is distributed. It's not centralized. So we don't send all the traffic to a centralized point, and then it's just the call setup goes to the centralized point, and then it's peer-to-peer from there on out. Yep. So we don't have these choke points like we used to have where the POPs, you know, where the Zoom central POPs, you know.
And I mean, and that's the same thing as well. If you think about interconnection between, I don't know, Comcast and Spectrum, they wouldn't, and I'm just using US centric examples because I'm a Yank. They wouldn't have had the capacity in place assuming that peer-to-peer traffic, right? There's not a ton of other peer-to-peer applications out there, but I'm sure they're out there deploying that capacity as quickly as they can. And
so we should have kept Napster growing all these years to get that site there.
If only.
We should be promoting BitTorrent in the downtimes between pandemics. Is that what you're saying? No, I'm just joking.
Well, I mean, help. The PSTN is where I've heard, and this is anecdotal, the biggest problems occurring, because at the end of the day, people stopped adding capacity to it. And now I'm hearing from friends that are trying to dial in to Zoom conferences or Meet conferences or pick your conference bridge provider of the day. And they're getting all circuits busy messages. And people are like, I haven't heard one of these in 15 years. That's because the interconnect has not been upgraded at the PSTN level.
They clearly need to buy more service from BT. I mean, on the PSDN side, I mean, we've been moving people off PSDN. So, and the PSDN was dimensioned for the modem days. So I have got glut worth of capacity on PSDN. We've shrunk it a little bit, but you know, it's quite hard to do that until everybody's off of it. Let me just take the peering thing. Here in the UK, all the peering points have done a fantastic job. They haven't had any big capacity issues. They've got a challenge because access to buildings is much more restricted if you can get into them at all. So I'm on the board of the Links, we've been looking after the staff. We have a team of engineers that help with some of the collaboration that Dave was talking about. But they are, you know, they've performed very well. They've had some peaks of record traffic as well, not hugely, but certainly it's busier than what's been seen in the past. You know, we have an exchange point in Manchester. It's busier. There's one in Leeds. It's not Links, but it's a Leeds exchange point. And there's also another one, Lone App, in London. They've all done a very good job of keeping the platforms running. And I think back to Dave's point about augmenting capacity, we normally start build from January through to kind of July, because that tends to be the quieter part of our network traffic. Hmm. And then as you come out of summer holidays, kids go back to school, students go back to universities, the weather gets worse. Not that it ever gets great, but it gets worse. We see our big tick up the second half of the year. So, and what we're trying to do, actually, we still have teams out there building capacity. It's harder for sure, because we have teams that need accommodation, because it's more than a one-day job, but we have them working in a safe way with the right space between them and the right PPE, etc. But we're still adding capacity because we have to do that.
Yeah, you can't stop.
We can't stop that. I mean, then on the mobile network, so we also have EE, which is our mobile network. Actually, traffic's down on the mobile network. It's kind of down about 10%, and continues to kind of, I mean, very gently trend downwards. The big challenge for us in the mobile network initially that we were a little bit worried about was most of the traffic in the mobile network is dimensioned around people being in cities.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden people stop coming into the city. We can see it on our kind of connection map where normally you've got this really big kind of green spot in London. Actually, that's a bit more distributed than it was before. So we were a bit nervous about that. But again, actually, the network's performed really well. People are using Wi-Fi and to kind of offload, which is helpful. And actually, some of the things that we've done in the last few years to augment Wi-Fi offload has absolutely helped. So, that's been the other big,
So that would be Wi-Fi and the ability to put telephone calls over Wi-Fi, like Wi-Fi offload for voice, would be
Yeah, so Wi-Fi
there.
Calling for voice, but also think, there's a lot of FaceTime out there. There's a lot of WhatsApp video. There's a huge, I think Facebook have probably sold a gazillion of those portal things. I bought one for my mother. I bought one for my father-in-law. We've got one here. It's just a really easy, it's like a picture frame. It's really easy to talk to people. It works. Actually, I think Facebook have done a tremendous job on it. It works really well. We see a lot of that sort of traffic. Just people trying to, again, people finding the simplest ways to stay in touch and using Wi-Fi. We still have a lot of people using the mobile network for fixed wireless access as well.
And that's working
very well as also. Yeah. But it,
so know, Dave, just, here in the UK we have unlimited data on our phones,
and
none of this 5 gig or 10 gig cap stuff. That's just
I went outside yesterday 2 days ago. What day is it? And as an aside, I held a team trivia night, virtual Zoom team trivia night for my group the other night. And the first question was, what day is it?
I've been putting out a public service announcement every morning on Twitter to say what day it is.
So I stepped outside yesterday and Verizon has deployed their 5G small cells in my neighborhood. And we can put the crazy talk about what they do from some people aside. I was getting 2.7 gig at peak off of that tower running speed tests. And all I could think to myself was, how quickly am I going to run into the cap on this thing?
The faster it goes. The faster
it goes. But it was impressive. But to Neil's point, there's, you know, the traffic from a mobile perspective was not built for the current use case either.
Let's press pause on the audio podcast capture engine to talk online IT training. Online IT training from IT Pro TV, our heavy networking sponsor today. A recent MIT study found that IT jobs have grown at more than 8 times the rate of other jobs over the past decade. Congratulations, IT professional, you are in the right career. So, what do you say? Time to level up? IT Pro TV has you covered. From CompTIA and Cisco to EC Council and Microsoft to VMware and AWS. Even ITIL training. Don't tell Greg. More than 4,000 hours of on-demand training is available in the IT Pro TV library. There are engaging hosts that present the information to you in a talk show format, not just a tedious lecture. They're live every day, and the shows go studio to web in 24 hours. Courses are conveniently listed. Category, certification, job role. You can find what you're looking for with no trouble. Stream the entire IT Pro TV library on demand worldwide via Chromecast, Roku, Apple TV, PC, or their iOS or Android apps. Learn IT, pass your certs, get a great job with IT Pro TV. Visit itpro.tv/packetpushers for a 7-day free trial and 30% off all plans. Use promo code packetpushers at checkout. That's itpro.tv/packetpushers and use promo code packetpushers at checkout. One more time. itpro.tv/packetpushers and use promo code packetpushers at checkout to try it free for 7 days and save 30% off all plans. Audio podcast capture engine re-engaged and on with today's episode.
What about BGP stability? So the last couple of days we've seen some BGP flaps. If you talk to the people over at BGP Mon and various of the community, they've seen a number of people manipulating the BGP prefixes, probably to optimize. It's not necessarily malicious. We saw a weird one come out of Russia's Rostelecom, where they took over 3,000 or 4,000 prefixes for a short period of time. And yeah. I think the conclusion is that they are trying to do some traffic balancing or something. Does that gel with you two?
Yeah. So, I mean, most of the time, those things are not malicious. They are, at the end of the day, people fat fingering, right? This is people trying to. Oh, this is people trying to make changes to how they distribute traffic, you know, in the same way that, you know, maybe they can't get connectivity augmented to some network and they want to find a different path. And this is usually just someone like punching in the wrong thing more so than it being malicious. That'll stabilize over time. I think it's way better. I think if this had happened 10 years ago before RPKI and a bunch of the other kind of sanitization efforts on the routing table, it would be a total mess right now. But kudos to a bunch of people who have really pushed to get that deployed around the world, because that makes the impacts of these things much, much smaller. Right? We're not seeing widespread outages because of that. To your point, you know,
which is we would have 10 years ago. We would have seen
where 10 years ago, you know, everyone would be rebooting their routers.
Yeah. I mean, I think we haven't seen much in the way of that's affected as a BT, although we have, you know, on our internal network, there's some metrics that we've tuned on OSPF just to get certain to use some, you know, we have 3 exits from all of our main POPs in each city in the UK. We're just trying to spread the load over that. Actually, it turns out we did that kind of, again, precautionary. Actually, turns out we didn't really need to do it. But I think I agree with Dave. I think the community that's kind of driven cleaning up the ruin table is probably, you know, getting their medals right now for it, because it has definitely helped. I think, but, you know, I always, when I talk to new engineers, I kind of make them, you know, new people into our industry, when they're talking about routing changes, I you're kind of like bomb disposal. Cut the wrong wire and there's a big bang. And when you cut the right wire, you know, you get a little bit of applause, but people don't really remember you. So they do remember you when you cut the wrong wire. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things that it's quite an easy thing to do when you look at it, but actually it's quite complex, and the side effects that you can get from it are, you know, will give you notoriety very quickly. you know, and actually, I'm, again, overall, when you think about the system that is the internet and the number of ASs and number of people involved in that, you know, if you were to have that kind of conversation, I don't know, in the 80s, you know, we're gonna have this system that looks like this. People think, you guys, you're crazy, but yeah, actually, it works really well. You know.
Hmm. Oh, well, you know, I have a fairly, I'm still convinced that BGP is the least best protocol we could use with that we could use, but there's no way you're going to change it at this point in time. No one's got any will to change the protocol to something particularly better.
No, we can just keep improving it and keep improving how we use it. It's yeah, like a knife. If you know how to use a knife really well, you can be a really good chef. If you're really bad at using a knife, you need a trip to the emergency room.
which is pretty much the story of many, many networking things. So I guess we're getting towards the end. It feels like we're getting to a natural flow in the conversation. Do you think that for the rest of, we're looking at another 3 weeks to 2 months of lockdowns in various parts of the world, certainly in most of the first world, we're into this third or fourth week of lockdowns. You think the internet will continue to be stable? Is there any reason to think that there's, you know, expected or unexpected things that you think could take the internet in the wrong direction and see some problems arise?
I don't. It's hard to see how, but you know, listen. Let's be realistic. But let's be realistic where we are. Our network operation centers are working from home, and for many, you know, for our organization, we're used to them being in the same room. So there's definitely, you know, it's harder for them to coordinate. It's harder for them. They're in an operating model they're not familiar with, not just with us, but, you know, across many other telcos. I think it's different, I think, for Dave's organization, which is kind of a bit more, you know, scattered. But, you know, that and the kind of pressure that we're under, and also if, you know, the other thing we're very cautious of, if a lot more people get sick and we have less people around, you know, we're not sure what that does. I look at the Christmas period where we have a kind of a network freeze, if you like. It's our most stable time, and we've kind of put in a semi-network freeze, you know, on some of the core network components where if we got it wrong, it would have a big impact. Which I think, you know, talking to my peers, I think a lot of others have done that. But I think, you know, we are in a world that we're definitely not used to from an operating model. That is challenging in itself. Plus some of the work that we do is very complex and very technical. So I don't think the internet is going to have any problems from what I can see. But will problems arrive? I'm sure we'll get some transient issues and you know, but
there's no structural, sure. We're not looking, you can't predict any structural flaws. Like, you know, you're not out of capacity. You're well within peak loads that you've already run.
Exactly.
But you're already doing upgrades to, and the, those upgrades. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, we haven't hit the busiest that we've been. And even the busiest we've been, we know we've got quite a few more gallons in the tank. So we're pretty confident at this time. And we've shared that with the UK government, who are fairly positive. Again, I'm speaking about BT, but we've had a few sessions with some of my competitors, Sky, TalkTalk, Virgin, Vodafone. They're all doing a fantastic job as well of keeping their networks running. And it's all about, you know, maintaining that kind of service excellence, keep thinking about the customer, keep thinking about what people are doing on the network. And it just kind of focuses your mind on, is what I'm doing the right thing? And if it's not, put your hand up and ask for help. And you know, we've got a pretty good culture of that, certainly at BT, but across our industry.
I think that's it's interesting, you know, going back to that, you know, the council of internet, sort of the unofficial council of the internet, those people are all talking to each other and solving problems before they happen. As you talked about, Dave, RPKI and the MARNS team are getting together to solve the flappy prefixes problem and tidy up who's going what and that. But you've got a more global focus, Dave. You're not seeing any particular problems globally either. It's not struggling globally.
No, I mean, look, people want to paint capacity is a zero or one, right? It's binary. Either you have capacity or you don't. And when you run out of capacity, suddenly a truck slams into a wall. And that's just not what happens, right? Yeah. We've spent decades now making the internet resilient to not only, you know, service interruptions, but also service contention. And so at the end of the day, like, we're not predicting some big precipitous moment in the next few weeks or months where things suddenly break. To Neil's point, if we do start running into issues getting additional capacity deployed, things could slow down. You could see some contention. But I think that the average consumer is not going to know the difference. And, you know, engineers, I've told my team, for example, they're in a super stressful place right now. All of us are, right? We're in a world where we don't really understand what is going on. No one was really wired to do this in the same way that our networks weren't built to do this. And I don't want them working 24/7 to get capacity deployed for some indeterminate period of time. I want them to remain healthy. I want them to continue to be able to care for their families and to do their jobs, but that's not their highest priority right now. So, you know, I think we're good. I think we're good across the industry. Everyone looks at it like that.
Somebody pointed out to me the other day that a lot of the health systems, a lot of the medical technology we have today actually relies on the internet to keep their licenses going. And if they have, if any of the hospitals have a hit to their internet connections, some of their machines will actually stop working, which is a really sobering kind of reflection where the medical system is becoming dependent on the internet at some level that we probably don't actually understand.
I think that's true for just about everything, though. Yeah. I mean, you know, the police are heavily reliant, you know, police and the blue light services are heavily reliant upon the network. It's hard to find an industry that truly doesn't need the network. I think the last guys to come off of old technology were lawyers, where they used to still insist on faxes. Thank God those days are over, right? But, you know, it's hard to find an industry or a thing that doesn't have some sort of reliance on the internet. And I think that's because over the last 10 years, we have done a pretty decent job of making it reliable, making it easier to use, adding, you know, fantastic products like Netflix and others. And I think, you know, that for me, I think I feel, you know, we talk about 5G and all the 5G hype. I kind of feel that people will look at what's happened here and say, actually, if some of that hype was more real, you know, if we had more of these sensors, if we had more of these things that 5G, that we've talked about in 5G, how might this been of, how might this been of better? How might this be different? And I think, you know, that's where I think if you look at China, they've used a lot of that technology to help contain the situation. From the outside, you know, there's a lot of stories about is it true what's happening there, but from the outside it looks fairly positive. You know, history will show whether that's true or not, but from my perspective, you know, understanding much more about, you know, if we had a sensor in every trash can, how many trucks do we need to go out and collect the trash? And if you've lost half your staff, that suddenly becomes a really important metric. And I kind of hope that this situation, you know, pray to God that we get out of it and that, you know, we're all healthy at the end of it. But I kind of hope that there's a springboard that says, okay, how can we take this technology one step forward? Of course, ensuring that we maintain privacy, ensuring that we keep people comfortable with it. But for me, you know, this is where we are now, I think, is one kind of slice of a much bigger cake that I hope that we start to really kind of delve into at the end of this, whenever the end of this is.
All right. And when do you think, let me ask you just one final question before we wrap this up. When do you think 5G will actually arrive? My guess is 2022, 2023.
It's on my front porch.
Yeah, I mean,
but it stops working the second I walk into my house.
Exactly.
Okay, it's right. Millimeter wave 5G.
My 5G. I mean, we here in the UK, we're at 3.5 gigahertz. I mean, in BT, we're in kind of 50 towns and cities.
Yeah.
We're rolling out. I think in the UK we have a 700 megahertz auction sometime this year or next year. There's some questions about when it is. I think that will make a big difference in terms of availability of 5G. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we have lots of customers using 5G who love it. I mean, I'll reflect on, and actually the thing I miss about the world right now, I commute about 40 minutes on the train into London is my normal day. I miss having my headphones on and listening to music and just looking out the window. I really miss that. It's crazy. the thing. I was like, what do you miss? That's what I miss. It's bizarre.
I was just writing an article about how much money I save by not commuting to work every day. No car mileage, no parking fees, no trains,
that's true.
Lunches, no clothes. Like, I'm totally into trousers with an elasticated waist. My consumption of, it's just dramatically down. You know?
So I mean, really, I was stuck on a train that was, you know, there was a problem in the station. I was stuck on it for an hour. I was able to download an episode of Top Gear in like a second and watch it. and on 5G, it was kind of my big first kind of 5G. Wow, that was actually quite useful. So, we're continuing to roll out 5G. We're continuing to roll out fiber here in the UK. FTTP, yeah. Openreach is still building, as are many of my competitors here in the UK. I think in the next year or two we'll see a big step up in availability of 5G and the use cases now to really drive adoption as well.
What about you, Dave? You excited to have it, or you're excited to see it in use by customers and by people?
I mean, look, we've put a lot of time and effort into making Netflix work really well across any possible use case within reason. Mm. And so I think, you know, to Neil's point, what'll be fun will be things like downloading happening in a second. But from a streaming perspective, I think it's more about, you know, the carriers being able to manage capacity more than it is about us providing a differentiated experience to someone with a 5-inch screen. I think we're happy to see it come. I think anything that advances the mobile network and makes it more like wireline is very much so welcome. Okay. Personally, I think it's great.
All right. Well, on that note, I think we will wrap up this show today. Neil, why don't you tell people on the internet and the people that are listening to where they can find you on the internet? Where should they go to catch out?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Neil McRae, that's typically where I hang out. You'll see me. I tend to go to UK North and present there quite a lot. We're working on a pre-COVID presentation for that because I think a lot of people want to know what happened and some of the challenges. And it's always easier, you know, after a few months, it's always easier to talk about the things that didn't go quite so well, which can sometimes be quite funny. And we've got a few funny stories and a few tragic stories as well that I think will touch people in the heart about how the network has really helped through this crisis.
Mm-hmm. Dave, where can people find you?
They can find me at @dtemkin on Twitter, same thing on LinkedIn and pretty much everywhere else.
And thanks very much to you for listening to today's show. As always, you can find this and many other fine, free and equally technical podcasts over on our website at packetpushers.net or in your podcatcher. Just search for Packet Pushers and you'll find 6 more channels of content just like this. Maybe some of those would be more into your suit your needs and your ability to develop your career and increase your professionalism. Don't forget on Twitter at Packet Pushers. We're on LinkedIn. It would be very helpful if you could rate us on Apple Podcasts. We work hard to try and bring this to you. And if you could it's useful for us to know that it's good for you to listen to it. And if others find it, that helps us as well. And last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.